This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Product you've likely seen sold at gas stations is facing increasing attention and legal action over concerns about its potential for addiction. Kratom, or kratom as it's also pronounced, is a natural substance, but a Missouri company is now at the center of a lawsuit over a chemical called 7-OH. Last month, Catherine Hanway, Missouri's Attorney General, announced legal action against the Kansas City-based American Shaman. At a press conference on March 31st, she called 7-OH products highly addictive and highly intoxicating.
7-OH, put simply, is a synthetic opioid that is being distributed over the counter in Missouri. We believe it is deadly. The FDA has said that the suppressive effects of it on your respiratory and coronary systems is three times greater than morphine. And to me, tragically, it's being sold as something that might even help you recover from your addiction.
And that was Missouri's Attorney General Hanway announcing a lawsuit against American Shaman. The lawsuit seeks to prevent the company from marketing, selling, or distributing 7-OH. This lawsuit is just one part of a larger conversation happening in Missouri and a majority of other states, places where kratom remains unregulated. To talk about kratom and 7-OH and to help us understand the questions around them, I'm joined by Jenny Armbruster. She's the executive director of Prevent Ed, which provides alcohol and drug abuse education in the St. Louis region. Jenny, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, Jenny, let's talk first about some basics. Kratom comes from a tropical tree called Mitrangina, and the leaves are crushed to make products like capsules and drinks that are marketed as energy boosters. When and how did kratom first come onto your radar?
We've been really monitoring kratom for several years. We know that as we've kind of seen different trends, especially related to the opioid crisis here in our region, kratom, probably it was about 8-9 years ago where we really started to see it become more widely available and on our radar as people were using it in a few different ways, because it does have an opioid-like effect when people consume the product.
Mm-hmm. What effect do people report feeling from taking the substance?
Yes. So as an opioid-like effect, many people, when they take the substance, they'll start to feel more relaxed. It is a depressant, meaning kind of slows things down in our bodies and our brains. And so it gives many of those same impacts as maybe some other substances that people might be familiar with. It also can impact pain. So it has been marketed and shared as helping to relieve pain. Again, very similar to substances that we see in that opioid family.
Mm-hmm. So you said about 8 or 9 years ago was when you started hearing about it?
I would say 8 or 9 years ago is when we were really starting to pay more attention to it and really look at how it was being sold in communities, how people were using it. It's not something that hasn't been around for a long time, but I think we really saw it grow in familiarity about 8 or 9 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Was there a point at which you started noticing it out in public, you know, on billboards or in advertisements in other ways?
Yeah, when Missouri first passed their medicinal use of cannabis products and we started to see shops related to CBD, many of those CBD shops were also selling kratom. And so you see many of the billboards and the advertisements looking at CBD and kratom products.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the introduction, I mentioned a recent lawsuit against a major kratom manufacturer and a particular chemical called 7-OH. Mm-hmm. Now, according to the FDA, 7-OH can be 13 times more addictive than morphine. So, Jenny, help us to understand, you know, what the difference is between 7-OH chemical and kratom.
Yeah, so naturally, 7-OH is a part of that kratom plant. As you mentioned, kratom is derived from a plant. 7-OH is a very small part of that plant, where there's some concentrated effects and some concentrated impact. And so when that is extracted from that plant, we have those higher intensity of response, right? And now we are also seeing where 7-OH not only can be that small derivative of the kratom plant, but also efforts to try to mimic that or, you know, produce it more artificially, because it is just a very small part of one plant.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are many places selling kratom in St. Louis. It is not hard to find.
Correct.
What do you make of how companies are communicating about kratom and 7-OH?
So at PreventEd and in the world of prevention, our biggest concerns are always our most vulnerable populations, which for us include young people. And so when we look at the availability and the advertisements of these products, that's really where our concern lies. Work in prevention focuses around ease of availability and perception of harm. And so when we see these products available everywhere, that's concerning, because they're very easy to access, very easy for people to purchase and have available to them. We also look at perception of harm. And so perception of harm really comes into place when it is advertised everywhere and it is, you know, next to a place where you might be picking up dinner or shopping. And the more that we see those types of advertisements, people become more familiar. It doesn't seem like there's as much harm associated. And then also the way that these are packaged and sold, being available in products that look very appealing to people. So whether that is, you know, a flavor or a size or a style, you know, so again, we're looking at that perception of harm and that ease of access.
Mm-hmm. Have you been fielding more questions at PreventEd about kratom, you know, in recent months or over the past couple of years?
Absolutely. I think anytime we see products kind of being talked about more, not only do we receive more calls from people who might be looking for support or services. So PreventEd, we are not a treatment facility, but we really focus our work in prevention and on helping people in their recovery journey or helping someone navigate that with their loved one. And so on the recovery or the access to resources side of the equation here, we see a lot of people calling with questions or you know, they might be thinking that they were using a product that they were not going to necessarily have the same type of dependence or addiction with, and then finding themselves in a place where they are struggling. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, on the prevention side, when we're working in schools and with young people and with communities, there's just questions and importance of sharing accurate information about what these products are, and that even if they're available at a local store or easily, kind of what really is in the product and how are those impacts, you know, going to create risks for young people.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about mm-hmm. recovery and sort of those risks later. We are speaking today with Kratom, about Kratom, a product that's legal but drawing concern over its potential for abuse. And our guest today is Jenny Armbruster. She's the executive director of PreventEd, which is an organization that provides alcohol and drug abuse education in the St. Louis region. Now, something that I do want to clarify is that it's clear that companies are aware of the controversy with 7-OH. Right? Mm-hmm. It affects their bottom line, right?
Of course.
For instance, on the FAQ section for a company called CBD Kratom, there's a location, I think, just down the street, right, from where you are in Olivet. That site for CBD Kratom states that it does not, quote, does not carry or endorse any products that contain added or isolated 7-OH. And the company says that 7-OH is already part of Kratom and, quote, there's no need to seek out enhanced versions that skip the natural process and introduce more risk, unquote. What do you make of that, Jenny? You know, the company's trying to put a finer point on where it stands around 7-OH in particular.
Yeah, so again, PreventEd, you know, as an organization, our mission is to help educate and make sure people have information and resources. When with statements like that, you know, on one level, we're not about prohibition. So, you know, this is not that we're saying that, you know, no, nothing can be available, and that there may be certain avenues where things can be okay for certain individuals. So on that level, as a business, I have to have some respect for them being able to clarify some of those points and being able to share that information. I think we still have to do more about talking about even the risks of Kratom, you know, what with 70H or without, as that statement said, 70H is naturally in the Kratom product. And so we still have to be able to have honest conversations about what those risks are.
Mm-hmm. We heard Missouri's Attorney General talk about the way that some people are taking Kratom to help them kick addictions to other drugs like mm-hmm. opioids. You know, how does that happen?
Yeah, so again, it's this perception that Kratom may be a safer product or have less of the impact or maybe some of the severity of addiction as maybe other drugs that we hear about, like heroin or fentanyl, that are in the illicit market. Again, the challenge becomes that Kratom still is not regulated. Mm-hmm. And so we don't always know what we're getting with unregulated products. So we're not always sure of exactly what the potency or the dosage would really look like. And so people, you know, using Kratom as a way to maybe decrease or end use from other illicit street drugs, we'll say, has been a path that many have looked at. And again, as a proponent of many paths for recovery, it's very hard to say, like, there's not one right answer for people. And we know that a risk factor of addiction is that pattern or that history of substance use and addiction. And so in many ways, we have to look at, for someone that is looking to reduce use or change addictive patterns with one substance, being aware of what that might lead to with another substance, because that individual is already at higher risk for addiction. Mm-hmm. And so really having those options and exploring what other paths to recovery look like, I think is absolutely necessary for anyone going through that journey.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are folks who say that they've had positive experiences mm-hmm. with Kratom. We received an email from Sean, who writes that he has taken Kratom for more than a decade to treat IBS, irritable bowel syndrome.
Yes.
He's critical of attempts to ban or regulate Kratom and said that news coverage of this issue, including our own here at STLPR, is unfair. He wrote, "This is not a widespread problem, yet you give voice to the claims of those in power looking for low-hanging fruit to further criminalize already vulnerable people." Jenny, does Sean have a point?
I think there can be some point. And again, you know, that we don't want to, you know, villainize people who are using substances. And there can be ways that, you know, any of these products might be beneficial in some cases. The issue is that we just don't know that for certain, that there has not been widespread studies on these, on different symptoms and what is the appropriate, like I said, dosage or amount that someone might use. So it's very hard to say, yes, that would work for that. Now, that might have worked for an individual, and those feelings and that experience can't be denied, yet there's also other treatments for many disorders and many diseases that individuals face. And we have evidence-based treatments for those as well available in the medical community. And so when we look at our work and we look at our work in prevention and recovery, we're constantly weighing the scales of risk versus what is protective for people. And with products like Kratom and 70H, there are many more risks that are presented.
Mm-hmm. One particular risk group is young people, mm-hmm. right? So how do you approach questions or concerns like what we heard from Sean as someone whose work is focused on educating people, but you're also working with youth, you know, with mm-hmm. minors, people who are under 21?
Absolutely. So, you know, this is where I think we have a much stronger stance and where things should be regulated, that these products should not be available to people under the age of 21. Brains are still developing. There are still a lot of unanswered questions about the long-term impact of these types of products. We know young people, the earlier they start using a substance, the more likely they are to suffer lifelong consequences related to substance use disorder. We know that young people, because just the nature of being young people, make risky decisions all the time. And when we introduce substances into that equation, it can be a recipe for disaster for many young people. So yes, these products pose a high risk to young people. So in our conversation with young people, we don't necessarily address kratom or 7-OH any differently than we would any other substance. We talk about it. We answer young people's questions. We encourage young people that they need to understand the information. They need to protect their brains. They need to know what they're putting into their bodies. And we encourage through education, that empowerment of making healthy decisions.
Mm-hmm. There is an ongoing legislative movement in Missouri to ban kratom. And during legislative testimony earlier this year, a father said that his son died in 2023 yeah. after ingesting kratom leaves. And he noted that people say that kratom is natural, but added so is opium.
Correct.
What do you make of that?
Well, yeah, I think most drugs, most medications are derived from a plant. So many things are natural. And just because something is natural does not mean that it's safe, does not mean that it's healthy. And we need to understand, again, the addictive properties of these substances. We need to understand the overdose potential, and that both the immediate risk that's proposed of, as again, like somebody can overdose and die, but also the long-term impact of, for young people, their brain development or their ability to succeed in school and relationships and all of those qualities of life that lead to success.
Mm-hmm. I'd mentioned the age thing earlier mm-hmm. because last month, the Rolla City Council unanimously voted to make 7-OH and synthetic kratom illegal to possess or sell. And that ordinance, along with making natural kratom and Delta 7 and Delta 8 THC available only to folks who are 21 and older, it also covers products that are marketed as energy boosters, you know, natural medicines,
yes.
and aids for coping with issues that range from drug addiction mm-hmm. to mental health struggles like PTSD. Do you think that measures like that are a net positive to the work that you are trying to do at PreventEd?
Absolutely, because we go back to that ease of access and that perception of harm. And so when those laws are put in place, even though they might not be perfect, and we know that there can be, you know, people who break the law and workarounds there, it still creates some buffer for us. And it allows some protection to reduce that ease of access and even to continue to engage in the conversation about the potential harms of the substance.
Mm-hmm. What's the takeaway you'd like to leave with listeners regarding kratom?
Yeah, I think with kratom and 7-OH, you know, really to be very thoughtful about using them, that, you know, again, the takeaway that they are not an approved, you know, substance for many of the conditions that people might be looking for them, that there are other options out there, and they are especially risky for minors, for young people, and for people who have a history of substance use disorder. Mm-hmm.
Jenny Armbruster is Executive Director of PreventEd, an education that, an organization that provides alcohol and drug abuse education in the St. Louis region. Jenny, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.